This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I am your host, Jared Turner. And if you have never tried archery blindfolded, you don't know what you are missing. I hope this joke hits the mark. My co-host is John Pasden, and you can say what you like about waiters, but John thinks they bring a lot to the table. Let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner joining you from Utah here in the United States.
Hi everybody, my name is John Pasden and I am in Shanghai in the country of China.
All right, John. Well, I know that today you have a unique situation to bring to our attention for discussion.
Yeah, so at my company, All Set Learning, I frequently talk with learners about the obstacles or the challenges they have facing Chinese. And I talked with a guy recently who I'll call Jim, an older gentleman, and he just brought up a lot of issues, which I thought were quite interesting. And we haven't maybe directly touched on all these issues in this podcast before. And I just thought we could talk about some of these today. And I'm not sharing anything too personal. I'm not giving you his real name, but I think a lot of people can relate to these issues.
Yeah, I think some of these are going to be really interesting to discuss. And I think what's always fascinating to me is how everyone's situation is so different and so varied. But like you said, John, I think there's a lot of interesting points here that someone can relate to and perhaps they've struggled with themselves.
All right. So let's start talking about this. So Jim, he's a bit older. His wife is Chinese and he's been studying Chinese for years, but he feels like he hasn't really made that much progress and he's quite frustrated. And so actually, when he reached out to me, he wanted to talk about, is it even possible? Am I kidding myself? Can I actually learn Chinese? And so you can imagine on the podcast, You Can Learn Chinese, I probably didn't tell him, no, you can't. I was encouraging, even though I don't know him that well and everyone has a different situation. I think that his issues were definitely worth discussing and hopefully I was able to give him some useful advice. And there are a number of different things we talked about. So the first one, he was talking about how he's a highly visual learner and he feels like he's not good at listening. And okay, so I let him talk some more. When he got into it, he was saying that he can't visualize the pinyin that Chinese people are saying. And he has a really hard time with pinyin. So what he meant by that was that when Chinese people talk, he couldn't connect it. He couldn't link it with the pinyin that he had learned. It just didn't seem to match. You know what I'm saying, Jared?
So is it something like he's not able to differentiate the sounds? Like they sound too similar and he can't connect that to what he's seen in pinyin? I'm just throwing out some questions here. Or maybe is it that he doesn't understand the pinyin pronunciation well enough and he's trying to pronounce it from like English pronunciation and Chinese?
All right, so yeah, I think part of it is not being familiar enough so that he couldn't differentiate the sounds very well. But also, the more we talked, the more I realized that he had this kind of mental hangup that I think I also had at one point way back in the beginning. Because, you know, this guy is in the US, he's not living in China. And I think a lot of us, when we start learning Chinese and we learn pinyin, you can't help but think that pinyin is like English. And I think it takes a while before you fully accept that pinyin is representing sounds that really are not English. Like every single sound is like a little different, some of them very different. And I think that people often take some time to get that. What do you think?
Yeah, John, I remember when I was first learning Chinese and I remember one of the spellings in pinyin that really, I don't know why, it was just difficult for me. It was dui, and I would D-U-I. And I think I wanted to say like Dewey or something like that. And I wanted to use, you know, like pronounce it as I would in English, but, you know, trying to maybe adapt my pronunciation to the Chinese pronunciation, I just had a hard time with it.
Yeah, actually, there are a lot of things about pinyin that can make it a little bit hard to learn at first. Like the D-U-I pinyin is actually D-U-E-I, but you just don't write the E. So it's not Dewey, it's Dewey, Dewey. And you just have to learn it. That's how you write it, D-U-I. But even just looking at the individual sounds, like the consonant and vowel sounds, of course, the R and the Q and the X are totally different from what you expect from English. But then even just like a T sound or a D sound are slightly different in Chinese as well. You know, an H can sound quite weird, and it just takes a lot of time to get used to. And I think some people don't expect that at all.
That's right. And don't get started on the UN, like Juin, Yuin, Yuin, right?
Yeah.
And John, my favorite pet peeve, S-H-I, it's sh, not sure.
Regional variation, all part of the fun. Yeah, so this was just one of the issues that Jim was struggling with, but combined with everything else, it did add up to a lot of frustration. So one of the things I advised him was that he really has to spend more time with pinyin and with listening while you're reading the pinyin so that you can forge this connection between the pinyin syllables and the actual sounds of the language, because you cannot rely on English. It's unreliable as a guide to pinyin.
Going back to really what he is saying here, says he's not good at listening, right? Can't visualize the pinyin. I still don't quite get what he means by can't visualize that pinyin. But really, if you're in that place, like John and I are talking about here, you just haven't had enough exposure to it. You need to be around it more, and you need to, you know, having some deliberate practice in varied ways. And just with enough exposure, you will get it.
Right. And here's the thing, which I think made it more frustrating for him, was that he knew he needed more exposure. So what he did was he watched a bunch of different YouTube videos and he watched a bunch of different Chinese movies. But, you know, keep in mind, he's a beginner and he wasn't really taking into account what level it's appropriate for. He was just kind of watching lots of different stuff. But I think a lot of it didn't have any kind of pinyin and he's just hearing the sounds. And so I guess he thought that would create that link that he was missing between the sounds of the language and the pinyin, but it actually didn't, because it wasn't really reinforcing and it wasn't building on the little pinyin that he had kind of learned fairly well.
That's actually a really good point here, John, because I think I should modify something I just said here, is that you just need more exposure. Actually, no, you need more comprehensible exposure.
And, yes.
And you, you know, you're watching these shows and movies or whatever, it's incomprehensible to you. Maybe you pick out like a word once or twice, but for every one word that you're getting, there's got to be 99 or not. And it's hard to pay attention to that. It's hard to derive interest into that. And frankly, it's really difficult for your brain to make any meaning when there's very little for it to latch onto where it can comprehend what's actually going on.
Yeah, and I would never tell someone, you know, don't watch Chinese movies because you're not ready for it, or don't watch YouTube videos that aren't exactly the right level, because that's a little too extreme too. But you definitely need the comprehensible input, because that's how you make the progress. And it can be good to just kind of take in the sounds of the language, sure. But make sure you give yourself—
That's right. I think you're totally right there, John, is that, hey, I think it's fine to listen to these things, but what I would suggest is that if your reason of watching them is to really focus on the educational value of it to help you improve your Chinese, but your Chinese is a very low level, or your ability to comprehend what's going on is very low, then I would recommend that it's probably not the best educational material for you. If you have other interests in it, or it's just something you enjoy watching for whatever reason, for whatever it is you're doing, yeah, great. But you may want to find, if you're really trying to learn, or the reason you were watching it specifically is to learn, and it's very incomprehensible to you, I'd suggest you do try to find something that is a little bit more appropriate, or something that you can at least understand more of.
Yeah, actually, I remember my very first year of learning Chinese in university. I watched a Chinese movie because, you know, I was learning Chinese and I thought it would be a good idea. And it was the Chinese movie To Live, 活着. You know, it's a classic. And I didn't really try to understand the Chinese. I didn't try to study the pinyin. I was just trying to get a little bit of Chinese culture. I don't know, just see what it was like. And there were a few little phrases here and there, just very little, that I was like, oh, I understand that. And that was great. But everything else that I didn't understand, which was 98% of the movie, I just let it go because I knew this wasn't my comprehensible input. And I was kind of surprised when anything was comprehensible.
Yeah, those are fun wins, right? And I think that's actually a good example, John, is that it's one of these balances, really. You know, should you delve into some of these materials, some of the, you know, movies, shows, whatever? Hey, if you really are enjoying it, go for it, right? But don't make that the core of your learning. And sometimes when you delve in some of these things, you do get out a little win, and that can be very motivating. And I can be like, yeah, wow, I'm getting this. And the truth is that, yes, you are. You are getting it. And you're going to get more and more as you go on and you get more exposure and you keep learning and studying because that's just what happens. So, you know, stay at it, but don't maybe make some of these things like the core of your learning. And there's a lot of ways you need to get exposed to the language if you really want to achieve fluency, the F word.
Yeah, and actually this takes us to the next major topic that we discussed, which is the role of curiosity in learning. Because he was telling me that I believe curiosity is a good thing. Curiosity motivates you to learn. So when I'm curious about something, I'm going to investigate it. So he was telling me how, you know, he would be doing some Chinese lessons and somehow the particle ba would come up. And, you know, he's still a beginner. And ba is something that you normally learn as an intermediate learner. But he was curious about it. So actually, the way he knows about my company, All Set Learning, is through the Chinese Grammar Wiki. So, you know, you're investigating Chinese grammar, you're going to find the Chinese Grammar Wiki. So just like you can go down the rabbit hole with Wikipedia, he kind of went down the grammar rabbit hole with the Chinese Grammar Wiki. And he ended up just kind of getting distracted and having more and more questions. And because he was getting into this intermediate stuff when he hadn't really mastered the beginner stuff. So it became this question of, okay, well, if curiosity is good, but I also need to learn this, what is to me a little boring, this basic stuff, then how do I find the balance between those two? And clearly the balance had swung way too far in the direction of, you know, curious, but not useful at this point in time.
Yeah, you know, this is a hard thing because there are many fundamentals that you need to learn in anything before you can handle intermediate or even advanced things. And while you can jump to some of those elements, the advanced or intermediate, and just basically understand only what you exactly need to know to understand these more advanced concepts, that learning becomes very, not functional, I would say. I think this applies as whether it's mathematics or linguistics or whatever area, right? Language, obviously.
Guitar, even.
There you go, guitar. Yeah, I can play a crazy riff, but I don't know how to play a chord, you know, a basic chord. So you can do that, but that learning becomes very isolated, and it's not something that you're usually able to learn or understand how it integrates and fits into everything else that you should be knowing or trying to learn.
Yeah, it's funny. On that topic of math, I was trying to get more into like his different attitudes on learning because, you know, clearly curiosity is a good thing, but he didn't seem to be properly valuing getting the basics down, right? So I asked him, well, in math, do you think this was a bit of a trick because I know that almost all older people tend to think that kids these days don't memorize enough times tables. Like, why don't they tell kids to memorize more times tables, right? And so it was kind of funny because he's like, I hated memorizing times tables. I never wanted to memorize that stuff, but my dad made me, you know? And so I asked him, well, okay, you didn't want to and your dad made you, but do you think it was worthwhile? And he was like, well, yeah, I guess it was worthwhile. So in this case, I think he conceded the point, but it is hard when your curiosity drives you away from what you know you really need to be learning, you know?
Like I said, I think this is one of the reasons why it can be hard. And then like you said, you know, hey, you're delving into something deep, deep mathematical concepts, right? And you enjoy learning about that, and that's great. If you really want to expand on that or know how to use it, you're going to have to learn all those other basics that go along with it. And that does turn some people off. And that's some of the, I guess, I don't know how to phrase it. Maybe this isn't the best, but like the hard slog, right? Of learning certain things. It takes time because there's a lot of things that you have to learn. And I think of it like a pyramid, perhaps of sand or something, that you can't build a pyramid that has very steep sides. You know, it's very tall with a very small base. It won't stand. It's almost like you have to have a wide base and you build off of it. And so you have kind of a very relatively steadier slope on that pyramid. And I think language learning and much learning in life is like that as well, if you want to really comprehend and grasp what it is that, you know, you're trying to learn.
Yeah, and that's what I reminded him. I was like, so you would be curious about things and you learn about them, and then you would intellectually understand about them. But that doesn't mean you can actually understand a sentence that uses ba, even though you learned about it, because your comprehension just isn't there. And even though satisfying your intellectual curiosity is somewhat satisfying, you want to balance that with the satisfaction of comprehending, right? So we're talking about comprehensible input. And it is very satisfying to be able to understand a sentence that you've never heard before that uses slightly more complex grammar or more vocabulary that you just learned and you comprehend it on your own. Like, that's enormously satisfying, even if it's fairly low level.
Now, John, I think this might relate to something else here about Jim, that he wanted to delve into some of these deeper things or something. He's really curious about some of this, how some of these words are used in Chinese. But you had messaged me some things about him a little bit before our discussion here. And you said that he finds a lot of things boring, right? And so I wanted to expand on this, but I'm assuming that it's like, yeah, okay, I found this grammar structure in Chinese, and this is interesting to me. And all that other stuff, like I'm describing that wide pyramid base stuff, it's boring. I'm not interested in really like taking the time to really get that down. What was his situation?
Yeah, it's true. He said he did find a lot of things boring, but I suspect that part of that was the way that he was being taught. Like, I've seen a number of approaches that actually really are boring. Like, some teachers will ask you something in Chinese and then immediately translate it in English. Like, they don't even give you a chance to try to comprehend on your own, even though it is at a level you should be able to understand. And yeah, that's going to get boring. Or if the questions are just so boring, like if the teacher doesn't actually try to make the material interesting to you or in some way bring joy into the lesson, then, well, yeah, that's going to be boring. So I don't know the history of his lessons and how he was bored, but I suspect that it's related to the methods that were being used.
Wow. I can relate to that. And I've talked to many individuals who've had those similar experiences. And, you know, really, it's sometimes, I remember, like, it could be different subjects in school. It's not always the subject. It's sometimes it's the teacher or the methods, just as you're describing there, John. You know, as I'm thinking through Jim's story here, it seems to me that he probably would be a great candidate for extensive reading, really focusing on learning in context and reading something he's interested in.
Yeah, it could be, although he really wanted to just focus on basic communication, like the kind of stuff that comes before extensive reading. I think he would get into it eventually, but so far he hasn't had the right approaches and the right focus and the right guidance, I guess you could say.
And you know what? That's a really important aspect there, is the right guidance. You know, a lot of times we just want to jump in and start learning something, and that is great. But when you really get into it, sometimes you need to learn how to learn, right? And I think this goes into a number of people who I've interviewed and met over the years who speak multiple languages, and they're kind of like, oh yeah, once I learned this language and I felt like I learned how to learn, I found out what worked for me and what didn't work. And so they were able to really apply that to really taking their language to the next level.
Right. But also, when communication is your goal, and it's not just, I need to learn these words, I need to learn these sentence patterns, but when communication is your goal, then the language you need to learn and, you know, what means what becomes a puzzle. And solving the puzzle gives you the reward of this satisfying communication. So if the learning can be structured in such a way that you're constantly solving these little puzzles and then making these little breakthroughs, and you're actually communicating with a human being, right? We call this communicative learning, then it's just so much more enjoyable. And I think the curiosity can also be satisfied in this way, but it has to be structured right. And poor Jim, I think he's had a lot of bad experiences learning, and it's really a shame. So what I told Jim was that maybe finding the right online teacher could help him, but it seemed like he was already a bit jaded. He felt like teachers just all do the same thing, and it seemed like he didn't have a lot of faith in that. So I suggested to him maybe a video course, not random videos on YouTube, but a proper video course could be useful to him. Like, you know, my friend Jason, that used to work at Yoyo Chinese, you know, I know they have some courses that have worked well for a lot of people. Our friends at Mandarin Blueprint, they have video courses that have worked well for a lot of people. Alset Learning is actually going to release a video course soon. So I know those work well for people. And if you feel like you're visual and you want to see the pinyin and be able to watch the same thing over and over in this visual medium, that can be useful. I think ultimately it's the best if you can do something face-to-face. I always love face-to-face, but you got to have the right situation for that.
John, that all sounds like great advice. And I think for anyone out there who can really relate to Jim, who has been struggling maybe in some of these different aspects, in these different ways of learning Chinese, things that might be working for you, but things that might not be working for you, I think what's important is to sometimes, you know, ask for advice. And I think, you know, hey, John is here. You can send him email. You can find him at allsetlearning.com. And there's a lot of people out there who are online who are going to offer some good advice, some not so good advice from time to time. But it's important, I think, to get a lot of different perspectives. And if you do have specific issues or specific questions that relate to your learning of Chinese, you can also reach out to us and we may be able to address some of them here on the show.
Just be warned, we do have a bias. We firmly believe that you can't learn Chinese.
Oh, that's right. John, you learned Chinese, didn't you?
So did you, Jared. So did you.
I guess even I did. All right, John. Hey, today we are going to do a rant and rave. All right. So, well, rants or raves, really. So, John, what do you have for us? Do you have a rant or do you have a rave?
I have a rave. This is something I'm pretty sure I've never talked about, but I've blogged about it many times over the years on my personal blog, sinosplice.com, and it's this thing called character play. So if you're familiar with the English wordplay, you know, you're doing something clever with puns or using words in ways that are unexpected or funny. You can do the same thing with characters. You're doing something weird visually, like incorporating visual elements like icons or pictures into them or combining them or making them weird but still comprehensible. I don't know, I love this stuff because you need a certain foundation in Chinese to be able to understand them at all. But if you have that, it's just very satisfying to be able to understand what's going on. So I recently blogged about something I saw, another example of character play. Not really something that's good for this medium, you know, it's very visual. But if you're interested, we can put a link in the show notes to some of my past blog posts about character play, because I really enjoy it. And if you like characters and you like creative visual stuff, you might enjoy it too.
Cool stuff, man. It's a deep subject.
But it's fun. All right, so Jared, what about you? Rant or rave?
All right, John, I've got a rave. I just came off of a family trip to go see the eclipse. We went down to northern Arkansas and were able to get a great view of it from there. It was, gosh, John, this was my third eclipse. Can't believe that.
Was it the best one?
It was amazing. You know, honestly, to a degree, it's like, I think the first one that's mind-blowing and you want to see it again. And so it's hard to top that very first one experience. But yes, it was pretty awesome. But I think the rave comes into the Chinese word for eclipse, which is rishi. And really, it's like what? Sun food. Sun
yeah,
eat.
Yeah, sun eat.
And then you have actually a total solar eclipse, which is what we went to go see. It was a rishi, which is sun entire eat. So I think it's just kind of a funny word. I don't know. I would have, when I originally was thinking about, hey, how do I say eclipse in Chinese? Did not anticipate that one.
Everyone loves a good sun eat, right?
That's right. Or a black hole sun.
Yeah, actually, I've never seen one. Never in the right place at the right time, but glad you had fun and didn't go insane.
Yeah, not yet, at least. Maybe someday, John, you too will go insane. You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. My name is Jared Turner, co-founder of the Manner Companion Graded Reader Series. My co-host is John Pazin, co-founder of Manner Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, and sinosplice.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. Take a moment to text or message this episode to a friend or share it on social media. It really helps us to reach more people on their language journey. You can leave us a review or reach out to us at mannercompanion.com or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can find our Chinese Graded Reader series on Amazon, iBooks, Google Play, or wherever you find your books. And apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is Jasper Chua. And, of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Pazin. See you next time.